Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is a remote edition of Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. Today's live performances come from the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. Carl is one of the pioneers of what's come to be known as the second wave of Detroit techno. But he has also become known for kind of stepping outside of the usual techno realm, working with chamber ensembles, symphony orchestras. He even brought his Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble to Carnegie Hall as part of Carnegie's Afrofuturism Festival. The Synthesizer Ensemble recorded some live tracks for us at Spotlight in Detroit, and we'll begin with this version of Carl Craig's tune called At Less.
Thank you.
piece is called At Less, and it is music from Carl Craig and a live rehearsal recording by the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. Carl, I have to say that when this tape was first sent to me, it was mislabeled the Carl Craig Synthesizer Orchestra. And I found that telling because you really do get a kind of orchestral sound with this band.
The arrangements, the original arrangements were actually done for orchestra. We performed the last orchestral set at Royal Albert Hall in London. And that was with the Chineke Orchestra, which is all people of color orchestra.
Right.
And it was just unbelievable. So it's not far off from calling it an orchestra, but because it's four synthesizers and a concert pianist, it's more of an ensemble than an orchestra.
Right. And I should introduce the members of the band. So it's Kelvin Scholler, John Dixon, Nicky Mooney, Ian Finkelstein, and Darius Quince, and of course, you, Carl. At Less is originally from your 97 record, right? More songs about food and revolutionary art.
Uh-huh.
So at this point, how many different versions of this tune are there?
I don't know.
I suspected that might be the answer.
Yeah, I can't really say because we've done so many performances of them. But, you know, Motown, they used to re-record their songs all the time. So why can't I?
Right. But there are such dramatically different versions of some of your pieces. You know, Sandstorms, for example. You know, there's the techno original. Then there's the beatless version. Mm-hmm. Then there's the orchestral version you did with Le Siec, mm-hmm. the French orchestra. So what is it in that piece that enables you to have such very different sonic worlds and for it still to be recognizably the same piece?
Right. Well, when I was growing into listening to music, I used to love elevator music. So people would call it Muzak.
Right.
So I love the idea that you get jazz versions, you get symphonic versions, you get, you know, all these different versions of something like Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So that always stayed with me. And because I also grew into listening to ambient music and, you know, new age music and that kind of stuff. When I compose, mostly I compose without drums. And then the drums are added. And that's, I think I read that from Billy Joel. He said that's the best way to start to write is don't think about the drums, just write thinking about the music and then add the drums later. So that's a point that I've always kept in the forefront of what I do musically.
Does that, are you aware of how, you know, some of your contemporaries in the first wave techno people worked? I mean, are you sort of an outlier by composing that way?
No, not necessarily. I mean, if you have everything sitting there, then you could do what you got to do. But the way drum machines were before I started out, you had, you know, rumba, bossa nova, cha-cha, you know, you push a button and you get some drums, you know? So by the time it came into play that I was making records to do a beat that's similar to Planet Rock or, you know, what you consider an electro beat or to do a house rhythm or whatever you end up doing, many times you were making beats just to make beats and you already had them in the machine. So you press, you know, button number 5 on a 909, it might have a certain type of program in it.
Right.
But of course, when computer came around, when I was able to compose and mix time signatures, then it became more of an interesting concept to not only how I compose, but also to where I put the actual, you know, percussive stuff in, and how, because the percussive stuff, you can write in three, but the percussion could be in four, and it still feels like it's in four, you know?
Yeah. So so the music is kind of crossing the bar lines, if you in fact had bar lines. Do you have bar lines? Do you notate music?
I am not a notator. No.
Okay.
It's not like in the movie about Mozart where he's jotting stuff from his head, from his memory. I think Quincy Jones can do that, but I don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. So when you do work with orchestras, you have someone who has that kind of ability, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the players need parts to read from.
Yeah, no. I understand that aspect of it. I'm not the guy that says, oh, I just put it in the computer and spit it out and they can play.
Right.
No, it doesn't. Right. It doesn't work that way. And that's why I like doing what I've been doing with orchestras, because you have to have a clear idea of how that musician works,
right,
and how they interpret that music. I learned that from Francesco Tristano.
Right. So Francesco Tristano, for folks who don't know, is this amazing pianist from Luxembourg who's based in Spain. And, you know, I think he probably recorded Bach before he recorded Jeff Mills and Derek May. But
yeah,
the first I heard of him was doing piano versions of these techno classics from Detroit. Really amazing guy. And so I guess I'm not surprised that you and he eventually hooked up. When people talk about the difference between first wave techno and you as a kind of leader of second wave techno, what do you see or hear as the main kind of distinction that between those two types of techno?
I don't know if I could say that I hear necessarily a difference. I mean, the difference that I know of is that those guys are the fathers. You know,
right.
Juan Atkins is the godfather. Derek May is the innovator. Kevin Saunderson is the elevator. That's just,
right.
That's what I
right.
see. And we're all making techno. So I could see a defined difference between maybe MK, because he was considered part of the second wave, but his style is house, you know?
Right.
Where what I do is crossing a few different dimensions. So we all learn from the masters, and I'm not afraid to say that. And I'm not embarrassed to say that I'm not an innovator in this thing like Derek May. He is the innovator of this thing, and he's always the god, you know, the god of techno.
Yeah. And he appears on that 97 album, More Songs
Frustration.
About Food. Right. I have to ask, are you a Talking Heads fan? Because that album title reminds me so much of More Songs About Buildings and Food.
I'm a big Talking Heads fan.
Okay, good. All right. the piece we're going to hear next is Desire. And when you guys were rehearsing this at Spotlight, you told the audience, it wasn't my desire to play Carnegie Hall when I wrote it, but you did end up playing Carnegie Hall as part of their Afrofuturism Festival. What was that like?
Carnegie was great. When I did Royal Albert Hall, one of the things that I said was that they didn't build Royal Albert Hall for men like me to play music. Men like me weren't even in the thought process of playing there. And it's kind of the same with Carnegie, but Carnegie is on American soil, and since I'm from Detroit, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did that I was upset about with that performance was that I couldn't sit in the audience and enjoy it. I wanted to be out there with my mom and dad, and my sister and brother were there. My friend and mentor who's sitting right across the room here now, Mark Moore, was there. My friend Toby was there. My wife was there, it was really amazing. I wish I could have been out there in the audience to experience it.
Well, let's give our listeners a chance to experience this live performance of the piece called Desire. It's performed by the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. That's Desire from Carl Craig, live recording a rehearsal at Spotlight in Detroit, home of techno and of the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. And Carl, is it true that the rhythms from Desire came from copy machines? Is that right?
Yeah. So I had a few jobs growing up, and of course everything is inspiring in some way or another. I worked for a family that had a landscaping company. We would cut grass, and that was a lot of fun. I worked at a furniture store, being, you know, the anything goes kind of guy, anything being moved or whatever. But the last job before I went out and just never worked for anybody else again was at a copy shop, a Xerox copy shop. And I was there with the machines. You know, I'd have to feed the machines. So when one document would go to be copied, it would make a rhythm. And then the paper would go through the machine. And then it would go through the sorter. And it just had a constant rhythm of what it did. And as well, I used to have to do something called stitching, which is basically I sat there with a stapler that was controlled by a foot pedal, and I had to take the paper, the collated paper, and make sure it's straight, and then push the foot pedal for the stitch to go in, for the staple to go in, and then put it to the side. So there was a rhythm in that. So I've got my rhythm that I'm doing manually, but then there are these copy machines that are making their rhythms. So when I would go home after work and start making beats, mm-hmm. they definitely were inspired by these machines. So, and Desire, you know, was I was living at my parents' house making music in their basement, and I definitely had a desire to get the hell out of that basement.
Yeah,
it was really, you know, great times in life, great times.
So that, you know, when you were talking before about, you know, fours against threes, that kind of polyrhythmic stuff. Mm-hmm. So for you, I mean, that job was kind of an experience in polyrhythms because you would have multiple. Yeah. Wow, that's. But of course, you know, there's a long tradition of composers. I mean, there are classical pieces written, you know, about trains, and mm-hmm. you know, you think of Balinese rice pounding music. I mean, the rhythms of work have been part and parcel of the creative process for as long as people have been working and creating, I guess.
Yeah. Natural rhythm is full of polyrhythms. It's full of clashing time signatures, clashing tempos, all these things that are very easy to translate into electronic music when you're using synthesizers and sequencers and computer and drum machines and stuff. So, you know, you don't have to translate it where somebody's playing in seven and another guy's playing in five and another guy's playing in three and another guy's playing in four and get them to stay in. It's like, you know, you can program that. That can be very effectively made with technology.
Right. So you can have a counterpoint of rhythm as well as a counterpoint of melody, if that's what you're looking for.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So Steve Reich did a lot of great stuff like that.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, you know, I think for people who are not in the world of house music and techno, it's seen as a very four-square kind of music, you know, that it sets up its rhythm and then it just stays there.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that, in fact, at least as you do it, techno can have all kinds of rhythmic complexity and depth to it.
Yeah, definitely. Miles had to change things when he was making jazz. You know, he had to, you know, force Herbie to play the little toy in the corner, the Fender Rhodes. You know, he had to push the boundaries because there were not only musicians that were trying to keep playing the same music or the tradition of the music, but they were critics that were trying to pigeonhole Miles and other musicians into what they felt was jazz music. If you walked outside of that, then it was no longer jazz music, you know. But Miles, he walked out of it very successfully with In a Silent Way, I would say, is probably the first one on my plate of how he was able to walk out of it. But, you know, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'm just agreeing with that long track, Peaceful.
Yeah.
From that album. I don't know what that is. I wouldn't call it jazz, but it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And he was influenced by John Cage and by Stockhausen and guys that were outside of that jazz world. And, you know, that's the same thing for me, is that I've had a lot of influence that's gone outside of techno. A lot of influence that's been inside of pop music, inside of jazz, inside of R&B, inside of funk, all that stuff. And I like to translate that into my music, which I consider techno, but it kind of goes outside of that realm.
Yeah. We're speaking with Carl Craig and hearing some live performances from a rehearsal he and the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble did at Spotlight in Detroit. And the third and final one is Technology. It's actually titled Technology and then in parentheses Version. Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of the parenthetical there?
Interesting. I don't know what to say about that. The concept of calling something a version, though, for me came from Jamaican music.
From kind of sound system, early reggae,
yeah,
things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so dub version, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And also Mark Ernestus and Moritz von Oswald from Basic Channel use that term quite a lot in their music too. So, but version usually for me, for my music, when it says it, it's just meaning that it's a different version.
Now, this is originally going back even further. This is from 1995 from Land Cruising. So the original would not have had the Obama clip we hear in this version.
No. The Obama clip I play on the live version. And that's definitely to give, people the sense of hope, because he does talk about hope.
Yep.
And I think we need that.
All right, well, let's hear this live performance of Technology from the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. Thank you. That's Technology, originally from the 1995 album Land Cruising, a new version played live at Spotlight, a rehearsal recording by the Carl Craig Synthesizer Ensemble. Six keyboardists, Carl among them. And Carl, what's the state of the art for you these days? When you sit down to compose, are you thinking electronic sound world? Are you thinking already of orchestral music? How's that working?
No, I write based on how I write and always written. I don't write with the idea that something's going to be a violin or something's going to be a cello or you know, whatever. I just make it. Now, when I was first learning how to synthesize on a mini Moog, the instructor was coming from an orchestral background. So he was trying to teach us how to program based on real life situations. But at the time, I was more interested in making things sound as synthetic as they can. I wasn't interested in something sounding like a real world instrument. But, you know, now some 30 years later, maybe that's not too bad of an idea. So.
But, you know, when synthesizers first came out, one of the hues and cries and hollers going on about it was, oh, this is going to take away, you know, jobs from real musicians.
Yes.
And that didn't, of course, happen. So, you know, it turned out there was a place for those very synthetic sounds.
Yeah. As you tell somebody who's just been dumped by a boyfriend or girlfriend, oh, time heals. Well, that's the same thing with technology. Time heals your misinformed ideas.
All right. Well, Carl, it's been a real pleasure having a chance to hear these live performances of some of your classics and to get to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more of Carl Craig's music and his collaborations with the pianist Francesco Tristano, there's a whole edition of New Sounds that you can find on our website. Go to newsounds.org and in the search box, type in the number 4240 and you'll get an edition of New Sounds that we call Chamber Techno. In the meantime, my thanks to our technical director, Irene Trudell, and our producer, Karen Havlick. We had help this time from Max Fine, and I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.